is Suit Up Sports.
Suit Up Sports.
Where opinions are as sharp as a tailored suit. No fluff, no gimmicks, just unfiltered, hard-hitting takes on sports and a whole lot more. It's time to suit up. Now here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Welcome to Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ The Suit Stout along with 10-year NFL vet Frank Garcia. Frank, are you jet-lagged as I am?
You know what, buddy? It was a great weekend. And, getting back yesterday, taking that red eye after, a couple of long nights over in Vegas, has us a little perplexed. I had a full day yesterday. I was out coaching my son's football team, flag football team, in the morning. So I didn't really get to sleep much at all. But, a little jet lagged. Slept like a baby last night. But this rainy day didn't have me wanting to get out of bed today for sure.
Yeah, red eyes sound a lot better than I think they are. You like the fact that you get back in that morning, but I didn't sleep at all on the plane. I did sleep yesterday when we got back some. Good night's sleep last night, but today's the day where you're just groggy. And like you said, the weather certainly doesn't help, but it was definitely well worth it. Thanks again to the Virgin Hotel in Las Vegas, to David and Cliff and all the guys. We had a blast. They were outstanding. The hospitality was outstanding. And
the good news is that they've invited us back.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a lot of fun.
We didn't burn a bridge.
No, we didn't burn any bridges. We didn't act like too big of fools. They have a great pool area over there. They have a great hotel. And it really was a five-star resort, it felt like, at times, the way they treated us and rolled out the red carpet. But UFC fights, they've kind of given us the open invitation to come back whenever we wanted. And the good news is we didn't lose too much at the at the table, so they're still trying to get in our pockets a little bit.
Yeah, first night and a half we really did well, and then after that I know at least my wife and I seem to give most of ours back and then some. But we had a blast. And the F1 race too, when that comes, that's that I definitely want to check out. I've heard nothing but great things. And the paddock is actually right behind the Virgin Hotel, so we'd be right there at it. So, yeah, thanks again to the Virgin Hotel. And Vegas is always a great time. But now we're back. We had a great 4 days of basketball. We were back in time to watch the games yesterday. There were some really good games yesterday as well. And now we're down to the Sweet 16. Couple dominant teams. You and I were just talking about Duke and Houston as of right now look to be hitting on all cylinders. But one of the things that you had mentioned last week when we talked about the tournament was the effect the NIL was going to have on March Madness. And you said that, because of NIL, you felt that it was really going to hurt the mid majors and be a lack of upsets mm-hmm. that we were used to. And you were spot on. There were, very few upsets. There's not a mid-major in the Sweet 16. It's four conferences left, and it's the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Big 12. So not one mid-major made it through. And my question is, would you rather have some of those upsets where a team or two gets through, a 12 seed or whatever gets through into the Sweet 16? Or would you rather have these great matchups we do now have in the Sweet 16? Because when you look at the bracket from here on out, these matchups are great.
Yeah, I mean, you get the Blue Bloods and maybe some other teams that haven't been historically into this position, Mississippi State being one of them. Mississippi being one of them. They haven't been here, and except for once in their entire existence. The SEC looked very strong.
Seven teams
into, the Sweet 16, which, they had the most teams ever, and they didn't disappoint. A lot of times we question that as well, going into this tournament to begin with, is this conference overrated because they really haven't stepped outside? But what has come to fruition is that they were as advertised. And they were as advertised, in my opinion, because they are the biggest powerhouse when it comes to making money and generating income in college football. And that usually transitions over into college basketball, and you get these big facilities and you get all this influx of money because they have to compete with Bama. You have to compete with Auburn. You have to compete with LSU in football, Georgia. So if you're going to compete with them, you have to build facilities to match them and then go recruit to be able to do that. And in order to do that, you have to have the money that backs you. And I think that's carried over into basketball, right? They are becoming complete sports programs, not just in football. They used to be football dominant. I know baseball, you could argue that the SEC has always been one of the strongest conferences. Pac-10 back in the day, Pac-12 now, used to compete no longer anymore are you seeing those conferences stand up to what these, you know, big conferences are doing in all sports. And basketball, this is what we're talking about now, you know, included. Just imagine this. Go back about 12, 14 years ago to Steph Curry. He was at Davidson and put them on the map, right? Had a great run to the Elite Eight, got past, you know, the teams that all the teams you're playing until they end up, you know, ultimately seeing their demise in Georgetown, but took them to the wire and had a chance to beat them and upset them to shock the world. Little old Davidson, probably about 5,000 students, 6,000 students. I mean, it's a little bit bigger now because of what Steph Curry was able to do, but imagine him being at Davidson for 2 years and having the growth and impact that he had early on and then no longer being there, because he'd be a crazy person to not go into the transfer portal and go get millions of dollars that are available at some of these other big schools. He'd have been at either Duke or he'd have been at Carolina for sure, right? So you no longer have those stories with guys like him. And the reason I'm using him, because he's the most popular now. You see what he's doing in the NBA. But you know, fast forward to where we are now, those guys are transferring. Those guys are going to be at these schools that we're talking about that can offer the biggest money. And now Steph back then may have not been, you know, the blue blood, the top recruit, might, you know, whatever it might have been, but he played himself into that and was a late bloomer. And if you were one of those players, and I give you a great example of the kid last night from Arizona,
Caleb Love,
you look at what he was able to do for the U of A, which is a blue blood program, you know, in college basketball, maybe not in football, but what he was able to do at that program last night, carry them past their opponent, Oregon, who also has a ton of money that's able to spend. And the reason why they were there, because Oregon has been okay, but not really, you know, one of the teams that are going to consistently be there, and they have a great coach. But Caleb Love was able to answer the bell and take him past the Ducks. And I think that's what we're starting to see. So you asked the question earlier, is like, do I want to see these blue blood, you know, yes, I do, because that's the best basketball.
I agree.
However, I also liked watching the upsets. I just don't think we're going to see any more of those. We're not going to see the Cinderella stories with Davidson and some of the other schools that have made those deep runs into the Sweet 16 and even gotten to the Elite Eight at times. I think those days are over.
Yeah, and you know, it almost, the NCAA tournament now has almost become an audition period for those mid-majors, because and not just mid-majors, for the other schools as well. We've already seen you know, some of the players who really played well in round one or two that haven't moved on to the Sweet 16 are no doubtly going to be leaving and going to teams with more money, as you mentioned, and coaches as well. Drake, who was a great story, had an upset in the first round. He's already signed to go.
They're auditioning.
Oh, no doubt. He's already signed. He's going to Iowa to coach now. You saw Coach Miller from Xavier. Now he's going to Texas. McNeese State with
Texas has what? All the money.
No doubt.
They have all the money.
Yeah, Will Wade going from McNeese State to Clemson. So it is an audition period and an opportunity for coaches to get raises and players to get raises. And I don't know if you saw the interview after the Maryland game, which, by the way, was a great game. Probably the best game of the day yesterday with the buzzer beater with Derek Queen.
Did the guy travel or didn't he?
Yeah, and then that's been a big controversy all day. But Derek Queen, the player that made that, true freshman, played high school ball with Cooper Flagg, ironically.
Oh, God, imagine that team.
Exactly. You know, the story after the game was pretty cool. The coach asked the players in the huddle, who wants the ball? And Derek Queen said, give me the ball. Mm-hmm. They gave it to him. He scored. They win the game. And
he's a big man trapped in a little. He's a big man trapped in a little man's mindset.
He is. And, man, it was a great floater off the backboard. But they asked him what made Coach Willard, Maryland's coach, who's been in all kinds of drama this week, too, with their AD leaving to SMU, which he kind of, I guess, let the cat out of the bag. Not a big fan of the AD, evidently. But they asked Queen what made him, you know, Coach Willard such a player's coach. And his first answer is, well, he's the guy that pays us. He pays us.
Yeah.
So you know what? We got to do what he says.
That's right.
And then he went on and talked about what a great player's coach he is and whatever. But money rules the roost now. And it might have done that to some capacity back in the day. Just we didn't know about it.
It was under illegal. The table.
It was under the table. Now it's out there. And so it is going to make a big difference. But, and again, everyone loves seeing those upsets, especially when it's not against your team. We didn't love seeing it when Duke lost in the first round. I'm sure Tar Heel fans didn't like when they lost in the first round. But when it was not your team, we loved rooting for the underdogs. Davidson's a great example. Everyone in the country was rooting for Steph Curry unless they were playing his team. Everybody. And so I will miss some of those. But, man, looking at these Sweet 16 matchups, I mean, you're looking at some huge now basketball schools because of football, obviously, helping, like you mentioned, with SEC. Auburn, Michigan. Ole Miss, Michigan State, Florida, Maryland, Texas Tech, Arkansas, Duke, Arizona, BYU, Alabama. And BYU is a little different story because those players stay there forever.
Well, not only that, but nobody knows this about BYU. BYU is one of the most successful football programs in the country. Yeah. Why? Because they have their own network.
Yeah.
So just like Notre Dame with ABC and the deal that they have, BYU has their own filtered into a money pot coming in, just like Texas did, right? So that's the reason why BYU's there, is because they can go pay their guys just like the other guys, and they have veteran guys that are going to stay there for 4 or 5 years. They're 24, 25 years old. They're a veteran team.
Yep.
They're older, and you influx that with some young talent coming in, and you combine that, it's going to be a pretty good team.
Yeah, and they play Alabama, which should be a great game, and then you've got Houston, Purdue, and then Kentucky, Tennessee. I mean,
Houston's probably kind of, the one conference or the one team that you're like, okay, where are these guys coming from? And they just got a bunch of dogs out there, man. I mean, Houston over the weekend, two teams to me stood out being the dominant teams. And I think a little bit had to do with matchup, but a lot of it had to do with, hey, we just showed up to kick your ass. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. And that was Duke and Houston, both of them. Houston walked through both of their opponents and said, we're better than you. We're not going to play to your standard. We are just better, and we're going to go out there and prove that. And we did. They did right away, and they jumped on the two teams that they played, and they extended the lead. Same thing with Duke. They won their first game by 40, their second game by 20, and their second game was a good team in Baylor. Baylor, to me, I was like, okay, this might be the one game that I'm looking for Duke because I think they're better than Arizona. I think they're built like Arizona, but they have better athletes. They have better talent. Caleb Love could be a difference maker and keep the game a little bit closer. But overall, Duke and Arizona have always matched up talent-wise, mm-hmm. identity-wise, the way they play, the type of basketball they play. Baylor was the one that I felt like, okay, they got some athletes. They got a guard that can flat out get it.
Edge and the true freshman, he'll be a top five pick.
That's right, he's a top five pick. And, yep. And I thought that they could athletically match Duke, but nobody is giving Duke any credit, including myself, to realize until you start kind of analyzing the games and seeing them against top talent, how good their defense is.
Yeah.
Right. And they are.
And Houston's the same way. That's the one thing I'd say about both those teams is they play great defense.
They play great defense. That's right. And it's not just one guy out there that has, lightning quicks and can just go steal balls, or a shot blocker that's just going to neutralize and, take away the middle. Duke has that guy, but they also have great team basketball. Shire has done a great job, and so has Houston's coach, with getting them to buy into their system. And it's not the slap the floor kind of Duke team that pissed everybody off, but these guys, if they could, they're slapping the floor visibly and playing great defense. It's the same type of a swarming, smothering defense.
And let's start, because we're going to go through all these games. Let's start with the Duke Arizona matchup, because it is an intriguing matchup. You are talking about two teams who are, getting in the Sweet 16 is something they're both pretty used to, going all the way back, whether it be Coach K or Lute Olson.
National championships have been played with these
national
teams,
championships
where they've come down to one score. Then you go back to Sean Elliott and,
yep,
some of those teams with Arizona.
Yep.
And then Stoudemire, I think, was on that team as well. And you saw Steve Kerr was on that team. And then some of those great Duke teams that played back in the day with Boozer and, some of the talent that they've had. So those were historic matchups. And Arizona beat them a couple of times in the championship.
Yeah, Duke's going to have their hands full. And, you mentioned defensively, a couple things that stood out for me with Duke again is, number one, Maliwach, the freshman, he's really starting to figure out, especially on the defensive. I mean, he's got a 7'6" wingspan. He's blocking shots. He's creating a heck of a time for the other team's big guys. I mean, and he's agile enough to get out on a guard. And we saw him yesterday out near the free throw line guarding guys. The kid can move, and he's really starting to figure it out. Cooper Flagg looked very healthy. We all worried about his ankle, even in the first game. You know, as we watched it in Vegas,
I don't think he was still 100% when that first game was around. It felt like he was timid testing it, didn't have the explosiveness off of that ankle. And the reason why we're able to say this, because, you know, we played sports our entire life, and we know what those injuries feel like, and we know the tentativeness that goes along with that. And you watched him and the way he was cutting, it was almost like he was hesitating to drive off of that ankle because he was afraid to hurt it. And that once he realized in that second game, you know what, I got through an entire game and we were questioning whether he should play and how much he should play.
Yeah.
He went out there and got it tired. Because when you have injuries like that, the first thing that sets in is that fatigue, because all your other ancillary muscles are working to kind of help fight for compensate for that. He got through the fatigue. I'm sure he was a little sore, went and iced it, did all the treatments that he needed, and then came out in that second game, and he looked back like the old Cooper Flagg.
You know, I thought there was a moment in the first game where when we were watching, he did at first look a little tentative. Yep. You know, especially we noticed it on defense, trying to slide when he was playing defense. But when he had that slam, you know, I think it was early in the second half, to me, that's when he kind of realized, you know what, I'm all right. And I remember when I played, when I was playing soccer, and I know obviously this was not at the same level, but I was coming off a broken ankle. And I remember the first game back, I'm wearing a Kramer brace. You know, I was tentative for a little while. And finally, I just said, you know what? I'm going to go slide tackle the crap out of somebody as hard as I can. And we're going to see if this thing is going to be okay or if it's something I need to worry about. And I did it. It hurt when I did it. But when I got up, I ran. I felt okay. And then that was it. I put it behind me. I felt like when he had that two-hand slam, it seemed like maybe that was him going, all right, I'm going to be okay. Because you're right. Against Baylor yesterday, he was great. And you know, the Duke is just such a tough matchup. You know, the tallest team, the longest team in the NCAA, you know, all year long, that's been one of their go-tos is how great they play defense, the mismatches they create. And now against Arizona, they're going to go up against really a nemesis of theirs, Caleb Love, who you brought up. When Caleb Love played for the Tar Heels, he gave it to Duke. And not only did he give it to Duke, he liked to talk about how he gave it to Duke. Whether it be the regular season games or in the Final Four, when he went for 28 points, 22 in the second half, scored hit a three-pointer with 24 seconds left to extend the lead, I think, to 4 points. I think that was the year that Carolina swept the Duke all three games. But
times have turned, and this isn't the same Duke players.
Oh, I agree.
And this isn't the same Duke team. This is these players, these athletes, these guys, and Caleb Love may have handed it to the name of Duke. Right. But it's not the Cooper Flagg run Duke. And it's not the Maliwash Duke. It's not the Knipple Duke. This is a different Duke team. And I think he's still a great player. I'm not taking anything away from him. He's the biggest concern that Duke has, because when he gets hot from the outside, he can be a difference maker. You know, we could say the same thing about Duke and their team. When our best shooters get hot from the outside, that's the difference that separates them from being a really good team to a great team, is that they can make their shots because of what Cooper Flagg brings and their big guys in the middle bring. Those guys are able to have open looks, and when they're hitting, they can dominate and blow you out.
Well, the thing that Duke has, and again, not to keep banging the Duke drum, but it's hard not to when they're playing as they're playing, they're also very deep. You look at some of the transfers they brought in, Sion James from Tulane, who's just a beast out there, tough defender. You look at Gillis, who had some good moments yesterday, the transfer from Purdue. Unfortunately, Malik Brown, the transfer from Syracuse, is out, who was their second best defender behind Flagg. But you're there, and now even Foster, number one for Duke. I mean, it's like during the regular season, you rarely saw him, and now you're seeing him in big minutes. Number one, the guard.
Oh, the guard, yeah.
And he shoots the ball well. A buddy of mine, Chad, was at the Duke Wake Forest game a few weeks ago, near the end of regular season, and he was telling me about, man, this number one kid who wasn't playing a lot for Duke, we watched him come out of the second half just warming up, and he hit 17 of like 21 threes just warming up. And since that moment that he told me that, it's been funny because he's been playing more. And yesterday he had a couple big shots, but they're so deep. And Shire does a great job, I think, of having the pulse of the team. We talked about Evans and instant offense, and we really don't see as much as him right now. You know, he's going to Foster a little bit more in those times. He's going to Gillis a little bit more in those times. And Shire, you know, who obviously there's never really been a coach to have to fill the shoes. I'm sure there is going back to Wooden or somebody like
Dean
that.
Smith, I mean, you had some great coaches that had to fill his
Coach
shoes.
Coach K was there for so long, and to fill his shoes, and especially
well,
that
Roy did a very good job at Carolina filling it for Dean.
Well, Roy went to Kansas for a long time.
Yeah, and then they also had a. Guthridge, a transition
kind of, and Matt Doherty. So yeah,
that's right.
Roy went and kind of made his own career at Kansas. Right. By the time he came to Carolina, he was already a Hall of Fame coach.
That's true.
But you know, Shire now
to come on his first coaching job,
yeah. Taking over for a legend and taking over at a time that college basketball and college athletics are changing with the NIL and all those things. Like, I don't think you can talk about what a great job Shire has done. And I know last year there was times where people were really questioning him, and you know, all that, there were so many other guys on the Duke tree, whether it be Dawkins or Amaker or Wojo or Collins that people wanted more than
it's
Shire.
Like, it's like what the you know, the coach for UConn has done there at his program, Hurley, what he's done with that program there. He's built them. We saw UConn, you know, giving Auburn all they could handle. Giving Florida all they could handle, right? And Florida had to go out there and get punched in the face. And I'm sure we'll get into that game as well. But, you know, for what Shire has done at Duke, no doubt, you know, and I've said this a million times, and I played on some really good teams, and I played on some really bad teams. Mike Martz, who was my head coach at the Rams, said something that stood out to me, and I was like, you know what, that's spot on in what you're telling us right now. And as a coach, I've used that, you know, kind of in, you know, some of the thoughts and the way you've formed things and what you think about. When you coach a bad team, right, you go out there and you beat them up. You play hard, you practice hard, you grind them into some steel.
Yep.
Right? When you have a very talented team, and it's the hardest thing to do because you have egos, you have talent, you have the potential of getting injured. Can you imagine if Cooper Flagg gets injured in practice or in the weight room or doing something that is, you know, just kind of a little bit more difficult, but you still have to get those guys mentally prepared and physically prepared to go out and play. So it is so much harder to coach talent, and Shire has a lot of talent.
Yeah.
It's so much, especially young talent with all the money and things that are going forward right now. He has so much talent that, and potentially could have a lot of egos. I think having a leader like Cooper Flagg, that is a grinder, that is a Kobe, is a Jordan kind of mentality. At least it looks like that, you know, as the way he prepares and the way he competes, that really helps a Shire to go be able to do that. Because being on the Rams on the greatest show on turf, right, the best thing that could happen for us, because we had so much talent, was our best players were also our greatest leaders and our hardest workers.
Yep.
And that's what has to happen in order to be a great team. And they have a confidence instilled with them. But Shire is able to manage them and know exactly where and when to put the pieces in. And that's the hardest thing to do as a coach.
No doubt.
And why he deserves, in my opinion, if they continue to play at this level and get to the championship with odds on favorite, I think they're plus 250 right now to make it to the championship. Compared to, I believe, Florida is the next, and then Houston is the third, and then Auburn is the fourth, and they're right around 330, 400, or 550, 500, 550 in that order to the odds to win. You know, but if Duke gets to the championship, or even to the Final Four, and somehow loses, if they get past Arizona, I think they're going to beat Arizona. When they get past Arizona, you're going to be looking at the Coach of the Year, National Coach of the Year, in his third year.
Third year. And, you know, the other thing is just having to mix all these freshmen he has and then mixing in some transfers who have each played at different schools, not small schools either. Tulane, Syracuse, Purdue. Purdue had a great run last year to the championship game, and Gillis transfers to Duke. So to mix all that talent together, and Cooper Flagg, they were asking him before the game, or maybe it was after the game yesterday against Baylor, but they asked him, look, you're a Rhode Island kid, UConn not too far away. They were all over you. Hurley was recruiting you for 3-4 years. What made you choose Duke over UConn? And his answer kind of surprised me, but he flat out said, because Coach Shire, when recruiting me, didn't tell me what I wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
He was the only one that wasn't telling me what I wanted to hear. He was the only one that
was going to challenge
and sat there and challenged me, and to the point it almost making me mad. But I felt like, okay, he's the first guy in a long time that wasn't sitting here kissing my butt, telling me what I wanted to hear. And when he told me that, I thought, man, like, that takes a lot of cojones from a coach to do that in this day and age, knowing that, again, especially against a team like UConn coming off two national championships, they've got money to spend too, you know, and to recruit that kid that way. And for him to say that in an interview really surprised
me. My question would be is what ring, championship ring, he was saying that when he was given that conversation, because that's the difference for me. You look at a young player coming out, and you're looking at the guy across from you, and he's wearing one of those things that you desire, and that's a national championship, right? To go out there, and he's giving you this motivational speech, or this, you know, this tough love, or telling you that you may not be able to do this, and you're going to have to work here to do that. And if you're an athlete and you really want to grow, you have to work on your strengths, but doubly work on your weaknesses. And if everybody else is telling you, hey, you're the best, you're great, you're this, and they're building you up, what do I have to work on? Right? When a coach challenges you, if you're a really good athlete, in my opinion, you really want to take that next level, you need that challenge. That's what coaches' yeah. jobs and responsibilities are as coaches, is to grow you to be a better version of yourself. You're ultimately the one who gets to decide that as an athlete, but a coach's job is to point out the flaws, point out the deficiencies that you have, and try to bring those out of you, motivate you to do those things. And I think that's, as what you point out, one of the biggest things that Shire was able to do, and shows you the character and quality of player that you're going to have as a GM at the next level, that he's going to continue his basketball career with somebody that's hopefully going to be able to grow him. And I think when you look at Kobe, same thing. When you look at Jordan, the same thing. They had those coaches that knew how to push those buttons to motivate. That's why Phil Jackson's going to be in the Hall of Fame. That's why Pat Riley's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That's, you know, why, you know, you look at these coaches and what they're able to do. Phil Jackson was the perfect guy for that, because he coached talent, and he also was able to bring that talent and the best out of that talent.
I agree. And listen, I know we're talking a lot more about Duke than we are Arizona, but neither one of us, even as Duke fans, are underestimating that matchup.
No.
Arizona can play. We talked about Caleb Love, yep. who not only has had a great season, had a great game yesterday, and also has had Duke's number in the past, and came out saying, we're ready for Duke. The interview right after the game, he said, we're ready, baby.
Well, you
and
know I what? He gave a great thought-out answer. The lady that was interviewing after the game, after all the emotions are high, and he was just kind of the player of the game that took over in that game, you know, she questioned and asked him, what is it going to take for you to beat Duke? And he thought about that, because he was like, he was about ready to, you know, just kind of give you that brash, we're going to whoop their tail, and this is what we're going to, but he thought about it. He made a politically correct response. He took his time, something we can all learn, you know, how to do as men yeah. when it comes to responding, and he responded versus reacted. And he said, listen, Duke's a very good basketball team, but we're going to be ready.
Yeah.
And that's really all. And it's like, you know what? That's the best answer. It's the best answer you could have given, because it's the confident answer. It's the, it's not cocky. It's confident. We're going to do what we need to do. We know Duke's a good team,
yep.
but we're going to be ready.
And there was no bulletin board, you know,
that's right.
statement.
We're going to be ready.
He just came out and said what he needed to say. And Tommy Lloyd, Arizona's head coach, I saw a stat and I might mess this up, but I think he's got the most wins, or he's at least in the top three for coaching with wins over, since he's been at Arizona in regular season and the NCAA tournament. So the guy can coach. There's no doubt about it. He can recruit. So it's not going to be a gimme for Duke.
Well, all these teams in the Sweet 16, you know, have been there, done that. Shire would probably be the coach that has the least tenure and has, you know, maybe the you know, most experience playing in championship level games. Right. So, I mean, that's the crazy part about it. Even though he's young, he's old at age. He's like, you know, he's like one of those 24 year olds that act like they're 40. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know he's older than that, but
I think he's 37.
Yeah. He has the experience of a veteran coach that's been there, done that. Not only is he able to relay what a coach would, because of the pedigree he got sitting on the bench with Kay and learning and absorbing how he approached things, but he also has it as a player.
Yeah.
Under K. So he gets the best of both worlds, and then he's able to transfer that to guys like Flagg or some of their other players on that team that are very talented young players.
So we both expect that to be a good game, but I think both of us if we're picking,
I think the spread right now is 9. Duke's favored by 9. And you know what? If I'm betting, I happen to be a betting man. I'm taking Duke in the over, or Duke to cover.
Cover 9. Yeah, I go with Duke. I'm not sure on the spread yet, man. That's a lot of points, but I think Duke gets it done. Let's move on to BYU, Alabama. We talked a little bit about both those guys earlier. BYU, veteran team, plays really hard. Another team that plays really good defense, shoots the three ball well. But Alabama is a team that Nate Oates, you know, his coaching staff and everything he does on that team is to get them to play like an NBA team. That's part of his recruiting. You know, you come here, we're going to teach you how to play in the NBA so you can move on from there. When they're on, they're maybe the best team in the country. And they're scrappy. They're fast paced. Sears is one of the top 5 players in college basketball. Nate Oates does a great job coaching. So that's going to be an interesting matchup because, like I said, if Alabama's hitting on all cylinders, it's going to be a tough matchup for BYU.
Right. Well, I think BYU, you know, where they can match, and that's what's so interesting about a lot of these matchups is that it's the talent versus experience and the shooting potential of these teams. BYU can shoot the lights out. And they play pretty good defense, and they have some experience. You know, all those things apply. I just don't think they have the talent ultimately. And if Alabama plays their game, right, and if they show up and they're both playing at their A level, Alabama's a better basketball team. You know, by how much, we're going to find out. But that's what's so great about sports, right, is styles matter.
Yeah.
Styles and the way and coaching decisions, and those are the types of things that you can say, you can do. And defense, you know, it's easy to say I can play great defense when I can, you know, move my feet better than everybody else. So I have the ability to play better defense and better athlete. And I think that's ultimately why I think Alabama's better is because they have better athletes that can move their feet faster,
yeah,
or jump higher or, you know, things like that. I don't know if they're going to shoot better, and that's a skill as well. But the athleticism and the God-given talent obviously favors, in my opinion, Alabama in this game. And now it's just going to be, you know, how we play together as a team. And that's why BYU is here. And there's some value to that. There's some value to that. If Alabama doesn't show up and they're not on their A game, and BYU, I don't even think they need their A-plus game. If they bring their B game and Alabama has their C game, they can lose that game.
Yeah.
I mean, BYU can win that game.
Yeah, BYU been a really good Wisconsin team. I mean, Wisconsin during the year has looked great at times, and BYU beat them and move on. Alabama really hasn't been challenged yet. St. Mary's is a solid basketball team, but I don't think anyone really thought they were going to have the chance to beat Alabama, and Alabama handled them pretty easily. They hung around for a while.
St. Mary's gave Alabama all they can handle.
For a while. I mean, they were a 10-point game for the most part.
No, they were up 4 points in that game, St. Mary's was, and then Alabama came back in the second half, and Alabama put the screws down late. That game was a close game where St. Mary's had a lead in the second half, and then about 10 minutes to go, which is about three quarters of the game of the way through, Alabama started.
Yeah,
the hype and the heart wore off, and then the athleticism took over. Better basketball.
They took care of that. And now we move in down to Houston, Purdue. Purdue's kind of the forgotten team in this whole thing. They made the national championship last year, you know, with Zach Edey, their big 7'4" center, who's now in the NBA. We mentioned Gillis transferred to.
They have a great coach, too.
Great coach. And again, they're kind of the forgotten team that if you want to play the no respect card, he definitely can be playing it this week because being in the national championship last year and not really getting talked about much. But, man, now they're running into a buzzsaw in Houston, who we mentioned earlier is playing as good as anybody.
Well, Purdue has, you know, that grit that you look for in a team. You know, who's going to be the guy that steps up and responds when the other team hits a big shot or the other team has a deep run or a nice run? Purdue has started both of their games on fire.
Mm-hmm.
They've been prepared and ready to go, and they've answered the bell. What's happened is that, you know, they get streaky at times. They get a little careless with the ball. I don't know if they have the great athlete that differentiate them between, you know, some of these other top tier teams, but they have 4 or 5 guys that can all shoot it. Their point guard can light it up. If you leave him open and he gets hot, he can be a difference maker, but they also have a pretty good bench where guys coming off of it can help, you know, kind of bring those points back in. You know, so, you know, that was the difference between, you know, Purdue and, you know, what they're able to do and, you know, their toughness. I think they're a tough basketball team. I just don't know if they're going to be able to, you know, go out there and get it done.
Well, you know, and again, they
because Houston right now, I mean, when you look at dominant teams, they got, I said it earlier to start this, is they got some dogs out there.
They do.
They got some guys that go out there and they get after. They got a point guard that is elite and fast and can take you to the hole. And they also have guys that can crash the board and rebound. And the biggest difference from them is that we talked about the guys that are capable of moving their feet to play better defense. That's them.
Yeah, I think Houston's going to win. This would be a double-digit game that I would be willing to bet on because, again, not to take anything away from Purdue, but they beat High Point and they beat McNeese State. Now, McNeese State was a great story. They handled Clemson convincingly. I mean, Clemson seemed like they couldn't hit the broadside of a barn most of that game. So, you know, I don't think Purdue's really had much of a chance to get to this point. Houston just had to go through Gonzaga, which we know Gonzaga's in this you know, tournament every year, usually going on a lot further than they're going to this year, but that's because
Gonzaga's a good program.
Yep.
And you knew that they're going to be prepared.
Yep.
Houston jumped on them early and often.
Yep.
That game wasn't even close out the gate. And then, you know, if you're asking, you know, my opinion of the over the results of the weekend, that was probably the biggest shock is how good Houston looked against Gonzaga, because we knew Mark Few is going to have their team ready, and they have some tournament experience and they have veteran players. Right, that's what Gonzaga is going to bring every year to the game. But you're seeing the difference now, right? And this is the difference between NIL money and where you're talking about with guys that are just good seniors that have sit in a program for years, waited their time to go through that and come out and play. That's the difference. The guys on the other side of the court are just better. They move their. They got five lockdown corners out there, and you know when you have that, you know, ability to go out there and move your feet and it's tough to do anything on the offensive side unless you get lights out from the outside, and that can be the difference maker.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you had to pick three teams that play lockdown defense, you know, that's left in this tournament, I think you go Duke, you go Houston, and then you go to this next team that we're going to talk about in this next game, which is Tennessee. They're taking on Kentucky, which, you know, is a great rivalry, right? I mean, Tennessee-Kentucky has been for a long time. Two damn good teams.
SEC battle.
Coach Pope in his first year at Kentucky after taking over for Calipari, who we'll talk about in a little bit, had a really good season, some ups and downs, some good streaks, a couple low points. But for the most part, Kentucky's had a really good year. And now they run into Tennessee, who, again, they play outstanding defense. And they're one of those teams that if they're on offensively, because they can go 8 minutes, 6 minutes without scoring a bucket, and that's what's killed them all year long. But if they're on offensively, they are a tough matchup. But again, the SEC matchup, these teams are familiar with each other, don't like each other, and it's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, Tennessee, you know, had a good matchup against UCLA. They're the two seed coming into the tournament. They took Florida to their limits, and Florida ended up winning that SEC championship, but they were in it. Tennessee was there with them. And that means at the end of the season, going through that conference, because, you know, again, we go back to the beginning of this the year and in this tournament, and we're asking ourselves, is the SEC for real? You got Auburn, you got Alabama, you got Tennessee, you got all these teams that got seven of the teams make it to the Sweet 16. Yes, they're for real. And Tennessee made it to the championship against those teams, having to go through that gauntlet to get there. And that shows you two things. It says they're talented and they're playing their best basketball. So, yeah, Tennessee is going to be a tough out for anybody that you play because of what you said. They can move their feet. They can play great defense. And even though they may sputter at times scoring the ball, they can create turnovers and get those easy opportunities in those transition baskets that you're talking about because of their great defense.
And it's really hard to beat a team three times in one season. And Kentucky's won both games. They beat them by 11 at home, and they beat them by 5 in Tennessee. It is. It's very hard. We saw it with Duke and Carolina, even though, you know, Duke had a couple injuries, but how Carolina almost came back. It's tough to beat a rival and a good team three times.
It is, but sometimes you can just have that team's number.
True.
And it's like little brother. You know, even though you're not maybe the best you've been all year, you still have the style of basketball to play that beats that team that might be better than everybody else. They're just not better than you.
Yeah.
And that's where Kentucky, I think, you know, when you look at this game, it's going to be interesting to see, because Kentucky on one side says, okay, we're going to get their best and it's tough to beat them three times, but we beat them twice. And you know what? They're still little brother. And until they come out and knock us off, it's going to be a great game. But I do think Tennessee is playing better basketball now than they did in the regular season when they played.
Yeah, and Rick Barnes has that knock, you know, not been able to win the big game. So he'd like to get that monkey off his back. But, you know, if I'm picking right now, I think I would lean Tennessee as well. Their offense has looked better than it had during the regular season. They, like you said, they had a good run in the SEC tournament.
They had a great run.
They brought that, you know, into this tournament. But I think that's going to be a great game that I can't wait to see. Matter of fact, out of all the games on that we just went through, minus the Duke game,
Duke Arizona is, yeah. I mean, I don't want to. I hope it didn't make it sound. I was singing so many praises for Duke. I didn't want to leave out the fact that Arizona just beat a really good Oregon basketball team.
Yeah,
and you know, there's a lot of people that may not know about Arizona, you know, that live on the East Coast. If you live on the West Coast, you know about Arizona basketball, you know about UCLA, you know about Oregon. You see them all the time. And, you know, that's a good basketball team. I just don't know if they're in the same caliber level of the elite when it comes to, to Duke. And I think there's four teams that are elite. And Duke is obviously near the top. Florida's another one. Auburn's the other one. And then you have to say Houston.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And if you're a Carolina fan, you played Arizona early in the season, which is a good game, a close loss for the Tar Heels. But you at least saw that Arizona team, and they've gotten a lot better since then. They've played a lot better basketball again this past month, which is what you want your team to do. When we get back, we're going to go over the eight other games. Again, some great matchup over here. We talked a little bit on I guess it was Friday, about how excited I was to see a Calipari-Patino matchup. We got it, and it didn't disappoint. Arkansas, kind of the one team, if you look at all these that are left in the Sweet 16, that I think people would say they're shocked would be there. But we'll get into that, pick our winners for that, and we'll go over our own brackets, which ironically we're tied. Yeah. Shocker. But we'll do all that right after this.
It's time to suit up. Here's your host, DJ the Suit Stout.
Welcome back, Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ the Suit Stout, along with Frank Garcia, talking some NCAA basketball after four great days of hoop action. And now we're down to the Sweet 16. We've already covered five of the, how many games did we cover?
Four.
Four of the games. Excuse me. I can't do math. We've already covered four of the games.
Four games, eight teams. That's half the bracket.
Man, I'm telling you, jet lag. but now let's go over here to Auburn, Michigan. Auburn, obviously, been number one team in the country the majority of the season. I've got some vets, you know, four-year player in Broome, who's, you know, he's going to be up there, National Player of the Year. I think he was National Player of the Year. Bruce Pearl, a guy that's been around, wins ball games. Going up against Michigan, who is a pretty interesting team because they've kind of come out of nowhere. They kind of, you know, they had a decent season, but Dusty May, their head coach, brought Florida Atlantic to the Final Four.
What's his name of the head coach?
Dusty May. I know you've probably seen movies with that similar name. That's not him.
No, it's not the same Dusty May.
not the same guy.
That sounds like a name. Dusty May.
It does, but he's come over and to Michigan along with his big 7'2" center who can just flat out ball, and he's got him to the Sweet 16, and so not unfamiliar territory for him, but man, they're running into an Auburn team that, again, when they're playing their A game, tough to beat.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, Auburn is the most experienced team in this tournament. When I say experienced, the oldest team. They have a couple 24-year-old guys, a couple 23-year-old guys. And typically when you have talent, you know, those guys are in the NBA earlier in their careers. So, you know, I think this is a group of guys that have come together, led by arguably the Player of the Year, National Player of the Year in Broome. And, you know, I think that it's easy to see Bruce Pearl's personality when he coaches this team because, you know, he's a high-energy guy. He loves the sport. He loves his kids. But he's just not able to win or has not been able to win, you know, those big games when you know, it's come down to that. I don't know if Michigan has the firepower that Auburn does, but Auburn has not played real well towards the end of the season. They've won the last two games that they played in this tournament to get to this point, obviously, but they've lost before that three of the last four. And I think that was one of the key factors. If you look back at the the reasoning and rationale and the analytics for why teams have done or why they should win, they would have been eliminated in that category, because no national championship have ever lost three of the last four games they played and been able to make it, and or had a three-game losing streak and never been able to make it, and that would put Auburn in that category. So, again, those analytics don't mean much. That's what has happened in the past. This is a completely new year, completely new guys, and, you know, they have a good task in Michigan ahead of them. I have not seen a lot of Michigan basketball this year for the reasons you said. They've just kind of flown under the radar all year and, you know, have found their niche. And that tells me that they're a tough team that is, given all they have, that have found a bond and something, a little spark, you know, and they probably have a lot of confidence right now. Knowing they're playing Auburn, I think that I'm not going to sit there and say that they're afraid of Auburn coming in here, but they know who they're playing. So they're going to be ready. They're going to be prepared. And they have a guy that can be a difference maker with their center.
Golden. Yeah, he 7-2. And if you remember watching Florida Atlantic last year when they made their run of the Final Four, I believe it was last year or the year before. I think it was last year. He was dominant, and he's been that way in the tournament. I think he had 14 points in the first game, and he had a better game.
But it's not what they're doing necessarily on the offense side to make them dominant. It's their impact on the game. Same thing you could apply to guys like Cooper Flagg or Brump, some of these other guys that, you know, they just don't score the basketball. They also, you know, are the reason why these teams are so good on the defensive side. And I think, you know, again, going back to defense, when you have a 7-2 guy that's going to be different than most teams you play, if he has the ability to score, but he also has the ability to defend, you can push your defense out to the perimeter and allow him to kind of be the eraser, where teams are having to hit mid-range jumpers, either pull up or take it to him, try to get him in foul trouble. And that's going to be, you know, I think one of the things in this game is that could be a deciding factor is that the depth or the lack of depth on a Michigan team versus Auburn, where you have five guys on the bench that can come off and probably be in the same position, you know, with where they're at, because you know, they have a talented 10 guys.
Yeah, and Auburn does have a couple big guys that can get in there and bang. And so it's not like this kid, you know, is going to be able to go in there and just dominate Auburn. Auburn's got some big bodies that I'm sure Bruce Pearl will be throwing against Golden as much as he can. Gale's a player for Michigan who had 26 against Texas A&M, including a huge shot at the end of the game. So they do have some guards that can get the job done. But Auburn's going to be too much for them, in my opinion, at the end. So I'll take Auburn,
because
I think you will too.
I have Auburn going all the way, but go ahead.
So, you know, the next matchup, which will be interesting, because you're going to either have more than likely you could have an SEC matchup if Ole Miss were to upset Michigan State, or you could have a Michigan State game, which would be crazy. But Ole Miss, a lot of people didn't think they would get this far, taking on Coach Izzo and a Michigan State team that has, you know, again, they're very familiar with being in the Sweet 16. Coach Izzo seems to get his team's Sweet 16 and further a lot more than he doesn't. And then you got Coach Beard at Ole Miss, who, you know, came over from Texas Tech. Very good coach. He's turned Ole Miss around in a really quick time, and now is playing a little bit of the role of the underdog. What I'm not sure if they are, because I think Michigan State, as good as they are, I think Ole Miss creates some issues for them.
Yeah, you know what? It was funny. A couple of years ago, I think it was when you know, the toughness was being taken away from sports with how you prepare. You know, I think Izzo got in a little trouble, and I remember watching the video of how he prepares his teams. You know, doing the right, it's maybe not Bobby Knight style, where he's throwing chairs and haymakers at these guys and, you know, bullying them around the court, but he's going to have his team prepared, and they're going to be a tough physical basketball team. They're going to put bodies on guys, and you know, they're going to be scrappy. He was throwing basketballs at guys when they were shooting. He was taking bags as they were going to hit layups and whacking them with the bags. And a lot of the you know, the kind of the softer side of sports, where we're sitting there crying, he's being abusive to his kids and he's beating them up. No, he's preparing them.
Yeah.
He's preparing them to play a competitive basketball game.
To play
Big Ten basketball and be a tough basketball team. So, you know, I think when you look at, you know, ultimately these matchups, these eight teams that were these 16 teams that we're talking about, these eight games, the one thing still, you know, it exists, right? Is that there is a toughness that exists in these teams to get here. right? And toughness is one of those things that's not defined by me being able to beat you up. It's what you do when there's pressure. What you do, how do you handle that pressure? What do you do when you get knocked down? Do you get back up and you know, go fight back? Or do you cower and say, oh gosh, that hurt, right? Those are the things that I think all of these teams exhibit, is that there is some sort of toughness that exists in these, but I don't know if anybody's going to be more prepared or tougher than Michigan State,
yeah,
because of the way that they prepare on a daily basis.
Yeah, and you know, Michigan State, they beat Bryan in the first round, not really getting anything done. They beat New Mexico by 8 in their second game.
They're not overwhelming, but that's Michigan State basketball.
That's how they play. They grind it out.
They're gonna maximize positions. They're gonna play great defense. They're gonna take opportunities of their runs. If there's a block or if there's a missed shot and there's a long rebound, you're going the other way. So they know when to run. They know when to slow down. But they're going to be a half-court basketball team that's going to beat you up. They're going to pass the ball around. They're going to maximize the possessions. And they're not going to be one of those teams going to win a 95-90 kind of shootout. It's going to be that old traditional 65, you know, 68, you know, 62 type of game that you're going to grind it out. And ultimately, they're going to be prepared for those situations where it's going to be us against you. And I like our chances because we've seen this every day in practice.
I'm not so sure that there's been a team in the tournament, though, that's had the quality 2 wins that Mississippi's had, that Ole Miss has had, beating the Tar Heels 71-64. And that game really wasn't that close. Tar Heels came back, made a mad fury at the end, and then beating Iowa State 91-78, who Iowa State, as we've talked about them a lot, had the potential to go all the way, had some injuries, but looked great in their first game. But for Ole Miss to beat Carolina by 7 and then whoop Iowa State by, I think, 13 points. I don't know if anyone's had two quality wins like they have.
Well, I watched both of those games very closely, and we watched the Tar Heel game, you know, because we might have had a little cheese better. And I think it would probably be the first time and maybe the last time that I was ever rooting for a Tar Heel team to do well. And what the difference was in that game is the Tar Heels didn't shoot the ball from the outside very well at all. I think they were like 2 of 15 in the first half. Ole Miss did. Ole Miss came out and they were lights out through the entire game, and till the end of the game, where there was a little pressure because the Tar Heels started hitting their shots, they started closing in a little bit, and then there was some turnovers. There, you saw a little bit of the chaos and not really handling those situations very well. Guess what? That's what Michigan State does really well. They force you into those decisions where if we turn the ball over here, we might not get it back for another 35 seconds. Right? And if we get if they get an offensive rebound, we might get it back for a minute. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, because one team is going to be trying to slow you down and the other team is going to be trying to speed you up, because Ole Miss plays in a fast paced basketball game, rebounds, shots, transition, get out, pull up, and they can slash as well. But it'll be interesting to see, because Izzo's going to have his team back on defense, and they're going to be ready for anything that Ole Miss throws at them, and can they handle that pressure? And that's what's going to, you know, I think, be the difference in this game, where ultimately you see a team like Michigan State, you know, coming through the ranks here, because they have that tournament experience with a coach that's been there. And Chris Beard is a good coach too.
Yeah, he's a great coach.
You know, but they have shot lights out, and that might be the one thing, is that now we're used to this arena, you know, where they were playing.
Well, they're moving now, I believe, to Atlanta. So,
and now, but it's going to be a different, backdrop. Right. And there's certain golf courses fit certain golfers' eyes because of the layout that exists. Certain shots, you know, are better for great shooters, because that basket looks as big as the ocean. And then there's going to be those challenges. What type of arena are they going to, or what type of challenge are they going to face in this different arena that they're going to, because the backdrop's going to be completely different. And I do feel like that could be a factor. But if they get out to a good start and they hit their outside shots, They can easily hang with Michigan State.
Yeah, I think they're going to beat them. I think they were underdogs in their first two games. They were a point and a half against Carolina, and they were getting 2.5, or it was a little bit more than that against Iowa State. And now they're getting 2.5 against Michigan State. I just think Ole Miss is playing great basketball. They play tough on defense. They're a big guy. Got up to a great start against Carolina, who I know struggles against hype. So we'll see what he does against Michigan State. But I think Chris Beard keeps him rolling. I think Ole Miss gets it done there.
So you take you like Ole Miss versus Auburn?
I like Ole Miss to play Auburn in the next round, yeah.
See, which would be an SEC. And I think that's one of the differences we have in our brackets. I have Michigan State. I have chalk pretty much on the top of that bracket there with Auburn taking Michigan State.
If we're talking the brackets we filled out originally, then
we filled out you filled out 18
well,
brackets.
I'm just saying, the one against you, I actually am screwed there because I had Carolina playing Michigan State. And I did have Michigan State beating Carolina, but just going over what the actual games are now and the way that Ole Miss is playing, if I'm going to put money on a game right now, I would take Ole Miss to beat Michigan State. Now, the next game I think we're both going to probably agree on, Florida versus Maryland. Maryland, arguably the best game of the weekend yesterday with the buzzer beater. We talked about that a little bit earlier with Derek Queen, wanting the ball, getting the ball, and then hitting a tough floater off the backboard to win the ball game. And then Florida having a tough season UConn team. I think they'd won 15 or 16 straight games in the NCAA tournament, back-to-back national champions.
Haven't lost in 3 years.
Yeah, and to come in there, great coach Danny Hurley, and Florida, it was a dogfight. It was a dogfight till the very end. As a matter of fact, even when Florida, I forget what the players, I think it was Clayton, when he pulled up with like 11 seconds on the shot clock for a three with like a minute or so left when there's no need to do that, and everyone's going, no, and then it goes in, and Florida yes! goes crazy. But man, Florida taking or having that tough of a game against UConn is only going to bode well for them moving forward. I don't know if Maryland has anything for these guys. And by the way, Maryland has had a great season. They have a very good coach at Willard. They've had their own off the court, controversy this last couple of weeks with the AD kind of getting his little secret about leaving for SMU. The coach Willard doesn't like him. He said it in a press conference, said he didn't get a contract that he wants. So anyway, there's a lot of drama going on there, but now the AD's gone, Willard's still there, and they're in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I don't know if that drama has anything to do with this basketball game other than the outside noises that may exist. And that's something I think a coach is going to deal with, not necessarily the team.
Yep.
I never remember, for one second, playing any sports, who our athletic director was, didn't have any effect on us. The coaches yep. did. So if Willard, who's going to have his guys ready to play, goes out there and it just comes down to, Florida and the best thing that could have happened, I think, to Florida happened. And that was, they got challenged and pushed. I don't know if it's necessarily a wake up call. I think they were awake. That's just UConn playing the best of their ability.
Yeah, I thought both teams played great.
And they both played great and up to their potential. It just come down to, who hits the better, bigger shots in the moments and who handles the pressure in those situations. And that's where Florida, that's the reason why they're the SEC champs, because they were challenged the entire way. Florida, to me, has probably the highest flyers collectively, the fastest team out there, and they just on every rebound you see two or three guys going up and crashing the boards. They do a great job of boxing out. They're active with their hands. They move their feet. They play great defense. Yep. And they have a point guard, to me, that reminds me of the point guard for New York, the New York Brunson. Knicks. Yeah. Great athlete.
Tough.
He knows how to stop start. He sees the court really well. He's tough. He can hit big shots. I think he had 27 in this game and was the player of the game. But he, to me, is kind of the orchestrator on offense and sets these guys up where they can come off the bench and hit shots. This is a deep basketball team. And it's funny because when you replace an athlete on this team with Florida, the next guy coming in looks very similar. He's a great athlete. He may not be the best, most consistent guy, whatever it might be. There's the deficiencies why he's backing up, but they have a great bench and they're deep, and their coach is going to have them ready to go.
Yeah. No doubt. Todd Golden, the coach for Florida, was previously at San Francisco, but
I thought he was at Maryland.
No, Willard's at Maryland.
Okay. Willard's at Maryland.
But Golden, is you got to, like you said, what a tough matchup for him going against UConn and Danny Hurley, back-to-back national championships, and his biggest game at Florida, to go through that battle and have to really coach his butt off against one of the best to do it in college basketball bodes well for them moving forward, especially when you've got, like you said, high flyers and great athletes at every position.
Well, and this is what will be interesting. I mean, Todd Golden for Florida he's kind of just come on the scene from nowhere. And so has Florida, really. I mean, Florida has a great tradition. They won back-to-back with Joakim Noah,
yep.
You know, back in the day, what, 15 years ago now, however long ago that was. What was it 2008, 2009, something like that? Whatever the years were, they won back-to-back.
Billy Donovan.
With Billy Donovan. And we see what Billy Donovan's gone to do in the NBA. But it'll be interesting to see if Golden, you know, kind of what his resume, if Florida were somehow, you know, win the national championship, what that means for him, because there's been some speculation with him, you know, there at Florida and some of the things that's gone on there as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's move on to Texas Tech, Arkansas. This is a game that'll be fun to watch because nobody had Arkansas. Well, I say nobody. I actually did have them picked in my bracket only because I thought they were playing great at the end of the
season.
You
had them to go to the Sweet 16?
I did. I had them this exact matchup against Texas Tech, but only because I watched them play in the SEC championship or SEC tournament. And I just felt that they're one of those teams with their back against the wall. Their best player has been out for a long time. Their second best player just came back. And you have Calipari, a guy who's been there and done that. And I felt they were getting hot at the right time. And also felt that their matchups weren't going to – Kansas hasn't been good all year, who they played in the first round. And then St. John's, I just didn't think was going to be able to score with them. St. John's a great defensive team, tough team. And it's kind of what happened. And Arkansas didn't shoot the lights out by any stretch of the imagination. They really didn't shoot the ball well at all. But Calipari gets one up again on Patino. And now here he is against Texas Tech. And Texas Tech, they can score, and that's been the thing for them all year long. You can't question the fact that they can score. Their coach, Coach McCaskill, came from North Texas, where he's won two postseason tournaments. He won the CBI one year, and then I think in 23 he won the NIT championship. So hasn't gotten the big dog yet, but obviously he can coach, and obviously he knows what he's doing, and he's got a team that can score.
Well, this is another SEC matchup that we're talking about right here. You know, are they not?
Texas Tech's Big 12.
Okay, Big 12. Big 12 and the SEC.
It's so confusing another SEC, all these teams.
Yeah, another SEC team in there.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's so hard to keep track of, you know, what conference they went to when you're, you know, 25 schools in Texas, you know, that you have. You have Texas Tech. You have Texas A&M. TCU. You have all sorts of, you know, different teams that are coming out of Texas. But anyways, that kind of takes away the point. I was going to see what their regular season record was, you know, with those matchups. Very similar to what we saw in Kentucky, Tennessee, where Kentucky, it was kind of the big brother. You know, in this matchup, it'll be interesting. But I do think that Arkansas is playing well. Texas Tech is the 3 seed. Arkansas has kind of seen their run come to an end, I think. And I think Texas Tech wins this one.
Well, that'd be a fun game. Like I said, Calipari is one of those guys that I really used to not like him. And then, you know, the older he's gotten, and then the whole way that the whole Kentucky thing transpired, and you know, him going to Arkansas, and you know, and then him coming back to Kentucky this year and beating Kentucky in Kentucky with all the drama that surrounded it, I kind of found myself rooting for him a little bit. And then just watching the way he talks to his team, and you would have loved the speech that he kind of said.
I saw it in the halftime.
About, you know, there's two dogs, yep. There's one bone, and who's going to go get it, you know? Yep. And to me, that's the kind of coaching that we were used to growing up.
Well, Calipari obviously is a great coach, and he has these guys, you're going to have these guys super motivated. And I think one of the things that he's challenged his guys to go out there and be better is because they come from great families. And I think that's one of the things that he's mentioned, you know, in one of his speeches. So he's going to have his team motivated. You know, Texas Tech is going to be ready. Texas Tech is a team that's played some very good competition, you know, in this tournament. The Arizona, they beat twice, lost two once. Houston, they beat and lost two early in the season and lost two of them late. They've also looked at Baylor, you know, with what they've done, and they were able to beat Baylor as well. So Texas Tech has some seasoning to them. They step up to those challenges, and that's the reason why you see them as the 3 seed in this tournament, because of their quality wins, you know, in their conference.
Who do you have, Texas Tech or Arkansas?
Oh gosh, I have neither one of them in my bracket. I thought that Missouri was going to be the hot team, but in this matchup alone, I think they're both playing well, but I'll take Texas Tech because of their their results in some of these other big games.
Yeah, I got Texas Tech as well, and I just think that at the end of the day, they can score. And the Arkansas, as tough as they're playing right now and as gritty as they're playing right now, I think they'll run out of gas against Texas Tech, which would set up a Tech, if we're right, would set up a Texas Tech Florida game, which would be a lot of fun to watch. And then up above, an Auburn, you like Michigan State, I like Ole Miss. But again, everything seems to be leading to what the majority of brackets, not just ours, but the majority of brackets that we've looked at, or when you go on ESPN or any of these sites, everyone seems to be leaning still to the Auburn-Florida matchup on one side, and then on the other side, a Duke-Houston or a Duke-Tennessee. You know, I mean, the other side, I've seen Duke-Alabama, which could very well happen. And again, we're not to step over Arizona. I feel like we keep doing that, and Arizona's going to beat Duke by 15.
I mean, Arizona's a better improved basketball team. If you look at, you know, some of their losses early in the season, they were to you know, power five teams. They were to tier one teams. We just talked about Texas Tech on the other side that they had beat. Arizona wasn't the same basketball team in the beginning half of the season that they became. And that a lot of that credit goes to their coach.
Yep.
And figuring out, you know, their rotation, figuring out what their strengths are, figuring out what their weaknesses are. And I think that's the, you know, the interesting part about the way the NIL, going back full circle to whether we like that or not, is that some of these coaches with a lot of influx of talent and players from other teams are going to have that learning curve. And when you play these good teams, it's going to push you to, this is where we need to improve. And now you, if you're a good coach, you have the ability to make adjustments, to rotate, to find guys, you know, that are going to make better matchups. It's the thing we love about the NBA, or we used to anyways, with matchups. And, you know, that first matchup, that second matchup, that third matchup, you're going to see different guys playing in different positions. And to me, that's where coaching and strategy really comes into it. And same thing exists with these basketball coaches that, you know, have their team. They really don't know how well they gel together, who blends, who meshes, how they move, bought into the system, new system, all the things that exist with having new players come in. But Arizona has probably grown the most from where they were at the beginning of the season to where they are now, playing a team like Duke.
Another thing that's interesting is the transfer portal opens today. So if you're a team, and Calipari brought this up too, after their big win against St. John's, you know, he's like, look, you know, we're starting practice on Monday to get ready for the Sweet 16. And meanwhile, the transfer portal's opening, and it kind of puts those coaches at a disadvantage a little bit, because these coaches that are not in the tournament now are on the phones, they're working the phones, they're trying to get these players. Players are entering the portal. Calipari had a funny comment, and he wasn't kidding, where he basically said, if any of our kids enter the portal, then they know that they're not coming back.
Yeah. You
know, and that was maybe a lightly veiled threat, but I also get what he's saying.
I think that was more of a promise.
Yeah, I think it was more of a promise, but you know, it really does put, I guess, some of these teams at a little disadvantage. Now, don't get me wrong, all these teams would rather be in the Sweet 16, every one of them to a man. And the further you, and the better you do in the Sweet 16, the more marketable your team's going to become when it goes for these kids for the portal. Some of the big-time players that are available in the portal are probably waiting to see what happens, because they may want to talk to Duke. And by the way, I guarantee you all these coaches today at some point in on their busy schedule are making phone calls to kids in the portal. I guarantee it. Calipari kind of alluded to that too. This, you know, that's going to have to be part of our schedule now Monday. Should the NCAA move that to when the tournament's over, or are you wasting so much time that then you put the teams that are trying to grow?
No, because you still have the ability as a coach. I think they should push it back because of this tournament still going on. There's a lot of these just talked about earlier that are making names for themselves. And if they want to have a different opportunity where they have a chance, if that's what we're going to go with, if we're going to say this is a system that's in place and we want the best for these kids to be able to make the most amount of money with their NIL deals and or the transfer portal so that they can get those deals, because that's the way you're going to make money, is like a free agent. Mm-hmm. You're a free agent every year with an opportunity for somebody to go and get somewhere else. Now you're tampering, if you're one of these other teams, with a guy that's still playing in the tournament, right? Potentially.
If they enter the portal, yeah.
If they enter the portal.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and if you're one of these players, this is your opportunity. Now, I don't know how long the portal's open. I don't know if it's like one of these, you know, close, fast, open, early portals. We're still learning about those things. But, you know, if you wanted to, you could go find a guy that is still kind of coming off the bench that isn't real happy with his minutes, but you see all the potential. And the kid that's that I'm reminded of right now is what we have at Duke. You know, with the guy coming off the bench, he can just instant offense. Is he a guy that is going to be, you know, approached, you know, from you know, some of these other teams if he enters the portal? But you're also taking that if you're not going to enter the portal, you're taking that away from me as a player, because I feel loyalty to my team that's still playing. But at the same time, I want to maximize my money. So I have to make a business decision here, and my best business decision for me might not be coming back to Duke, because they have those kids coming in that they've already, you know, offered or promised and things to. Where am I going to be a guy coming off the bench again?
Well, to me, that's where it really gets interesting, is if you're a player on one of these 16 teams left, it takes a lot of intestinal fortitude to enter the portal while in the Sweet 16. Even if you're the 12th guy on the bench, which at least then you can say you're not playing.
All it takes is, how do you spell my name? F-R-A-N-K. I'm going to put it in.
However, though.
See what happens.
Knowing that another team is not allowed to talk to you until you enter the portal. So no one can touch these kids that are playing right now, whether they're giving them $4 million, $3 million, $2 million. You have to enter the portal to be able to talk to them.
My question would be, if I'm that kid's agent, or if I'm that kid's dad, you have to enter the portal every year. That is going to be something that we're going to do to maximize our value. Because if the business, if we're talking business now, completely different than loyalty, mm-hmm. right? If we're going to talk business, because that's where this has become with the NIL deals and the portal and the transfers and all the things that go along with that, the best business decision for every one of these kids is to put their name in the portal.
I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying that if you're it just puts the players in these 16 teams in a very tough spot, because there very well may be more money out there for you, and it very well may be gone by waiting, you know, for the tournament to be over in April. And if that's the case, moving the portal back to start the day after the tournament makes total sense to me.
That's why I'm saying it's unfair for what you just said.
Yeah.
You said it may be a little bit differently than what I did. We're saying that the same thing.
Yeah.
Is that it's not fair to these kids, because they have to feel like there's some sense of loyalty to their team, as you should, and there's a reason why they're there.
Yep.
But you're not giving them the same advantage as you are the teams and the guys and the players that didn't make it to these weeks. You're punishing them, you know, by using that loyalty. You owe me loyalty mm-hmm. because we're here, versus saying, you know what, once this is done, we all know it's going to be the wild, wild west, and you know, we just have to deal with that, because that's the system in place right now. And that's why I'm saying, if you're going to do it now, there's no loyalty. If we're talking business,
yeah.
If we're talking team and things like that, but if we're talking strictly business and I'm your dad, where's their loyalty to you? How much money are you going to make at that university moving forward? This is long-term. This is game-changing money. This is life-changing money. And you might get hurt next year. Right. So you have an opportunity here, son, to go out there and put your name in the portal. No harm, no foul. We're just going to sign our name and then go play basketball. Yep. And we're going to play our butts off. But, you know, I know that we as loyal people look at that and say, gosh, he is. And fans are going to do the same thing, by the way. They're going to judge every one of these kids. They're going to write them hate letters. They're going to say, you traitor, all the things are going. And it's not fair to these kids.
Oh, imagine if a kid we'll just use Duke. If one of those kids enter the portal, what do you think is going to be talked about during the broadcast 100 times?
Yeah.
Right. DJ Stout's under the, I mean, it's going to be mentioned again. That's and again, right. And again. And then imagine being a team like the Tar Heels, where you're coming off a disappointing season. You definitely want to rebuild. You have a good recruiting class coming in, but you've got some guys on that team who have said they want to stay, like a Tremble and the freshman from this year, a Jackson, but they want to see what's out there. And so it hurts Carolina from that standpoint, as those guys are going to probably wait until this tournament's over, because they're not wanting to transfer to a mid-major. They're not wanting to transfer to a team that
they can't. Why would a guy from a team that is making this much NIL money with this much potential.
It depends on what he's making. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
That's true, too.
He's wanting to, you know, if he's only making a little bit of money and someone's a lesser school of Carolina, which are majority of the schools, want to give him more. And I know a couple of the kids on Carolina have said that they want to stay, but they also want to see what's out there. Of course, they're going to want to wait for the Dukes and the Floridas and Auburns and Houstons and these big teams, with Michigan State that we're talking about, are done with the tournament. So that kind of hand ties Hubert Davis from the standpoint of he's got to build a team, and he needs to know, even though these guys are saying they want to stay and he's working behind the scenes to find out how much money he can get to these kids. If you're their dad again, you're saying, yep, we want to stay. However, we also need to see what's out there, because I don't want to cut myself short at a period of time of 3 years, 2-3 years, depending on the player, where I can get paid a lot of money that maybe changes my life.
That's right.
And so it's an interesting topic to talk about. And it's one that if I had to bet on right now, if I gave you two bets right now, and I know me and you're probably going to agree on this. If I gave you two bets right now, I can't imagine one player on any of the Sweet 16 teams enter the portal during the tournament. I would be shocked because of kind of what even Calipari said. If you enter the tournament right now, you're not going to be on my team next year anyway.
And again, that's not fair to the kids.
It's not, but I would be shocked if they did. And also from a distraction standpoint, because it would create a huge distraction that I don't think many kids would want to have that reputation for what you said, fans and the media. The other part of it would be, I'd be willing to bet, and I don't know the reason why they opened the portal today, but I'd be willing to bet that that's changed.
It needs to change.
Yeah, no doubt.
I don't know if it has changed or not, but it needs to change.
Yeah.
For the reasons we're talking about.
Yeah, it's got to change.
And it has to change.
And it would be interesting to see what the coaches, and I got to think that, at least if I'm a reporter, all these coaches are going to be getting, you know, interviewed 1,000 times between now and their game. That's got to be a question I would think that somebody's going to ask each one of these coaches.
And that's, to me, again, going back to the fairness part of this, what the standards that we set for these kids is not the same standards we adhere to these coaches, right? For example, if you're a young coach and you've gotten your team really far and teams start coming out and making offers, big time offers to you as a coach, what are you supposed to do? You're going to go do what? What's best for your family.
Sure.
And we all sit there and say to that coach, you know what? I understand he's making $2 million here. He's going to make $20 million there, right? He's going to long-term. And their names get brought up in these deals, right? When it comes to their hot team, they're in the Elite 16 or the Sweet 16 or the Elite 8. Their names are going to start coming up for big contracts. Why shouldn't these kids?
No, you're right. And listen, we've already seen Will Wade, the head coach of McNeese State, before his first game in the tournament, before they beat Clemson, he had already admitted that he's going to NC State.
That's right.
The other two coaches, we mentioned how Drake's coach is now going to Iowa, and then Xavier, Coach Miller, is going to Texas. Now, they both are out of the tournament when that was announced.
Okay.
That's a little different, but Will Wade was announced while still getting ready to coach against Clemson in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So you're totally right. It's just a quandary that I don't know how you fix it. I just, you know, maybe, I mean, there's an argument.
It's easy to fix. You move the portal date back.
Well, I agree. But going to your coaching standpoint about the coaches, it's hard to say. I mean, do you also say that coaches can't change schools even if they're out of the tournament until the portal or until the day after the tournament when the portal?
There should. I feel like for the argument of these players, right? If the coach is the reason why we are coming here, which it should never be, by the way, I always tell every kid, you don't ever pick a school because you're a kid, because that coach could easily next year either be fired
or leave
for a better job, bigger job, right? So don't ever choose your school based on a coach, because there's no loyalty to you, even though you like that coach. There might be now.
It's part of the equation.
But now that was before all this, right? Yep. Now I think you can offer that opinion to a player. Right. And as a coach, when I'm talking to these players, didn't used to exist. But now if this coach leaves, guess what? So can I, because there's no penalty, because I just enter the portal. And if I like that coach and he likes me, and the reason I'm going to that school is because of him, and the reason because, you know, he recruited me. He's going to take me when he goes.
Well, and that's the thing about the portal day and tying the coach and stuff to it, which would be interesting, is because I can also see the other side of it. If I'm Iowa or if I'm Texas, who's not in the tournament anymore, I want to get my program rebuilt ASAP. I want to get this thing fixed as quick as I can. What's the first step? I have to have a head coach. Mm-hmm. So if I'm hiring a head coach, I don't want to wait until the tournament's over, because again, with the way the portal is, I could be missing out on some of these guys that are in the portal already that we would want to get. However, in the point of fairness, if the players aren't technically saying they're entering the portal. And again, maybe they will. Maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll be surprised. Maybe in the next week or two, we'll see some guys on these teams.
I would not be surprised.
See, it would surprise me.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe not the 12th guy on the bench. That wouldn't surprise me. But I'll be very surprised if a player giving meaningful minutes to any of the Sweet 16 teams enters the portal before their team is out. So if the teams that lose this week, I could see the kids then doing it. But the teams that get
the Elite Eight. Once you get to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, the teams in the Final Four, Elite Eight, I don't see any of those players entering the portal until the season's over. Then I think we'll see a lot of the kids on these teams.
So is it fair to those kids that don't have that same opportunity that these other kids have? Because now we only have so many spots. If I'm playing in the Elite Eight, right, is it fair to me as a player that, you know, I like it here, but I can flourish and make more money somewhere else? Is it fair to me that I'm going to be loyal to this team? And I like this team. I love this team, but I have a one-year contract with this team. And who's to say that they don't go recruit somebody to replace me?
Which happens
all the time.
Yeah.
And that may be, and that's the part of sports that we've lost with this portal. We've lost that you have to just outplay, outwork, outprepare the guy that's going to come to take your job. Because every year they're recruiting new guys. You know, every year we play in the NFL, the new group of guys come in to take your job. It's the same thing's going to happen here in college basketball with these players, these one-and-dones, these phenoms. They come here to these big programs, mm-hmm. and they get paid a little bit more. Now, where does that leave me? Right? So is it fair to that kid that could go make just as much money because I'm going to be one of those guys that have the opportunity to do that versus sitting there and saying, you know what, I'm going to be loyal to my school. Right. Where's the fairness?
Yeah. And I'll use Dusty May's Florida Atlantic team. There's three kids that were starters on that team that are in the tournament on different teams.
Yep.
They waited until after the season was over. Now for them, they all did get good deals. You know, like we mentioned Golden at Michigan, mm-hmm. or whatever. So it all panned out. And I guess at some point you could sit there and go, listen, the kids that are really, really good are going to get paid regardless. Maybe it's the middle kids that get lost in the shuffle, and that's probably what it is. If you're the seventh player on Duke, you could probably go somewhere and be the first or second player, make more money.
The kid off of Duke from his name is escaping right now, the instant offense.
Knipple?
No, sitting on the bench.
Evans,
right? There's a perfect example right there. Duke is going to have the top recruiting class again in the country, arguably, and they're coming in, and what's to say that just because I'm a sophomore now or another year into this, I'm not going to maybe the coach doesn't like me as much. Maybe I don't blend or mesh with his system mm-hmm. as much. I can still score. Everybody in the country has seen that coming off the bench. Mm-hmm. That's a hot commodity, right?
Yeah.
Why, if I'm him, wouldn't I say if the portal's opening now, it's a great opportunity to put my name in there because I'm going to be first pick. And I'm going to be the guy that everybody's coveting. So it's like I have to wait now because I play for Duke and we may go to the national championship. And I'm going to lose those opportunities because somebody else, they're going to go pay that to somebody else and they only have so much money.
Yeah. Well, and the other part of that too, is you can enter the portal as a not talked to. So you can enter and specifically have it designated as teams still can't talk to you yet, but I guess it lets the coaches on the other teams know that this kid's probably going to come available. So you could, I guess, enter the portal that way where teams aren't talking to you yet, but that to me defeats the purpose. You might as well go ahead and get it on because of what you said. There's only so many spots and there's only so much money. Now a kid like Evans, who is a good example because he was recruited by a lot of big time schools and a lot of those schools are not in the tournament right now. So they would love to be all over him today.
Mm-hmm.
So if he waits because of loyalty,
as soon as the portal opens up, he's going to be it's like the NFL draft. He's going to be the number one pick.
Yeah.
He's the guy coming out that everybody's coveting, right? Because he's already had that. He's had a good season. He's just not better than the guys that they have who might win the national championship.
Yeah. And one thing is, so today's Monday. When we do our show Friday, we will have, you know, 4 days of interviews of all these coaches.
Yep.
And 4 days of other coaching changes and things of that nature. So we'll be able to gain some more information on this. And on Friday, maybe we dive a little deeper into this because we will have some more information. You know, maybe we're missing something. I don't think we are, but maybe we are. But what we will also have seen a lot more of these coaches in the Sweet 16, I'm sure, get asked this question probably 20 times. And we may see some players, you know, enter the portal, which again, I'll be very surprised if a kid that's starting or at least getting given a lot of minutes. And we keep talking Duke, but they're a great example. They've got the most freshmen in the country playing the most minutes. They have three.
And three of those guys on the bench, not just him.
Oh, yeah. There's well, Monster, the kid we talked about earlier, number one. He's come on towards the end of the year where he's getting minutes.
When, what did we talk about at the beginning of this podcast and this show? We talked about this is an audition.
No doubt.
And if this is an audition, I'm an A+. Mm-hmm. I got two thumbs up by Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not going to be hotter than I am right now.
Yeah.
Here's my audition. I've performed. I've done everything they've asked me to do. Here's my opportunity to make money. Let's go do it.
And the great players, you know, are the really good players. And we mentioned the kids from Florida Atlantic. Gillis is a mm-hmm. good example. He played in the championship with Purdue last year. He went to Duke. The really good players are going to find a home, right? They're going to find a home and they're going to find money for them. The really good ones. But if those aren't the ones we're talking about. We're talking about the ones like an Evans, who was a great recruit, showed a lot of flashes this year, but if he went into the open market, is going to get paid a lot more than he's getting paid at Duke right now. It's not the top kids. They're going to find homes. They're going to find money. It's the kids like that. The
kids coming off the bench.
Yeah.
That have done everything that their coaches have asked. They've showed up in big moments. They just don't have that it. They're not going to be a top five NBA draft choice. Right. Where Duke has two or three of those guys. Mm-hmm. So if you're those guys sitting on the bench right now, you could still be in the NBA. And we've seen that happen from players from Duke and Carolina and a lot of other these top tier programs that have come in and done well.
Well, Caleb Love from Arizona is another good example. Caleb Love had a nice little run at Carolina. He had some clashes with some teammates and some coaching. There's a bunch of things that happened between those guys, and he got out of there. He went to Arizona, and he's flourished. Not that he didn't play well at Carolina. He did. We talked about how he lit Duke up in the Final Four a few years ago. But at Arizona, he has definitely flourished, and I don't know where he'll go in the draft. I don't know what his projection is, but I can guarantee it's higher now than it was.
Well, absolutely. He's a top five candidate for player of the year.
Sure.
And what he's done at Arizona, especially, I mean, you've seen his two tournament games.
Been great. You
know, yeah, against Oregon, he was the difference maker. His draft stock or his you know, stock in general has gone up.
Yeah, no doubt.
No doubt about it.
Well, it's been the tournament so far has been good. We both do miss some of the upsets and some of those games that make you go crazy. You know, it was funny while Frank and I were in Vegas at the sports book. You know, Frank, myself, and Big D, our producer, my son Connor, were watching these games, and old Charlotte Hornet Frank Kaminsky was there. And he was National Player of the Year while at Wisconsin. I think lost the national championship to Duke along the way. But he was there with a bunch of buddies sitting down below us at a table. And they obviously had wagers on St. Mary's in that first round game. And there was other guys in the casino area or in the sportsbook area that had money on the other side.
Vanderbilt.
And it was so funny to watch.
Every
time
game.
St. Mary's scored, that table would go crazy. Every time Vanderbilt scored, that table would go crazy. It was a back and forth all day long to where St. Mary's pulled it out. They didn't cover. But Frank seemed to have made some money. He went up to the ticket to cash something in. So I don't know if he had a teaser or if he bought a hook. I don't know what it was, but it was really funny watching that. And that's kind of what you missed in this tournament so far, is you haven't seen those back-to-back or those you know, tight
back
games.
And forth games.
Maryland was one last night.
They're not as many as what there has been in years past. And I think, again, there might be some more of those as we are getting towards the top of the pyramid in some of these matchups. It wouldn't surprise me if Purdue hung with Houston, if Kentucky beat Tennessee, if Michigan gave Auburn all they can handle.
Well, if you had out of the games left, if you had to give me what you thought the three best games, even if they're not back.
Kentucky, Tennessee is number one.
Okay.
I would probably say Auburn, Michigan is going to be a hell of a game. Michigan's playing really well. Auburn has struggled. I think that could be a really back and forth game. Depends on who shoots the ball better. I'd say that would be number two. And then I would probably say Texas Tech, Arkansas would probably be the games that, you know, I know we'll watch those games. They may be the most exciting, but I don't think anybody's anticipating them to be able to beat Florida.
I think that the Ole Miss Michigan State game is going to be a tight game and a lot of fun to watch. I agree with you. I think Kentucky Tennessee is going to be a really
I think that's fun. The number one game. Other than Duke, Arizona.
And then I was gonna say Duke, Arizona, I think can be a good game too. I don't think that Duke's gonna go in there and be able to run away with it. I think Arizona is a tough enough team to where it'll be a close game. I think Duke will pull away towards the end, but that'll be a fun game to watch. But those other two,
Arizona reminds me of just a slightly more talented Carolina
and a little bit taller.
And that, a little bit
that's
taller.
The key. Yeah, I
but
agree.
But I, at the end of the day, Duke has too many scorers. They have too many shooters, and they played. I'm telling you. Yeah, you look at great defenses, and when you see it with your eyes, you know that that's a great defense. They smother you.
Yeah.
They smother you. They get a lot of loose balls. They get a lot of turnovers. They get a bunch of rebounds. They are probably the best or second best team defenders in this tournament.
Duke, Houston, and Tennessee, yep. I think, are all above the rest when it comes to defense. And you can argue, there's arguments to be made.
I would make an argument for Houston and Duke being 1-2.
I would agree with you. Thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully you enjoyed our NCAA recap of the first weekend. Sweet 16 starts Thursday night, so we'll be with you Friday to go over those games, and we'll mix some Panther stuff in as well. They've got a couple safeties visiting today, trying to add to their free agent list so far.
Well, they only have two safeties on the roster right now. I think they may have added a third, but more for backup depth.
Yeah, special teams.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about
that. We'll jump into that, but we'll see you Friday.